Good evening. Welcome to the Salier Report. Today is Thursday, April 19th, 2018. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Under the category Hold That Date, we have a new USA Watchdog interview with Greg Hunter going up Saturday night. We'll post that on the website on Monday, but you can pick it up both at USA Watchdog and USA Watchdog's YouTube channel, as well as his Twitter feed. And as soon as I see it, I'll tweet it out as well. Australia, I'm going to be in Australia from April 20th. I leave tomorrow. And I'll be there till May 17th. I'll be in Uluru for 2 weeks with Richard Dolan and Jason Bawden-Smith. Much to report. I'm looking forward to it. Then from May 18th to the 30th, I'll be in New Zealand. I'll be in Auckland. We'll probably do a Q&A. So if you're in the Auckland area, hold that date on May 19th. More about that soon. And then I'm going to be in San Francisco on my way back June 1st to 8th. And we're going to have a lunch with Catherine on June 2nd in San Francisco. We hope to mail that next week or the week after. And then September 22nd, we're going to have a luncheon in beautiful Biltmore grounds in Asheville, celebrating the life and work of John Rappaport. That's lunch on September 22nd. We'll announce and mark it next month, but I want you to hold that date. If you're in the North Carolina area or willing to come all that way, it's going to be a very special occasion. The venue were renting seats up to 70, and it was inspired by the fact that Dr. Mark Skidmore and I are taking a road trip. Dr. Skidmore and his wife are coming and joining us. He wanted to meet John in person, and so we thought, great excuse to have a celebration. We've been working diligently on passwords. We no longer have a splash page, so when you come into the website, you come into direct, you just log in right on the homepage. And we've updated a lot of the things we're doing on customer service. I deeply appreciate your feedback. It was definitely clunky. The payment gateway suddenly required us to go back to our current provider for subscription software instead of the new high elegant solution that we had been working to implement for the last year. So it was disappointing that we couldn't use it, but all's well that ends well, and we couldn't have done it without all your great feedback and patience, and I really, really appreciate it. Keep it coming. Oops, we didn't realize when we went live with the new site that even though only subscribers could post comments, everybody could read them. It wasn't supposed to work that way. We had to get some coders in to do some special modifications, and now all comments are private. I deeply appreciate it. It was a devastating moment when I discovered that had happened. I felt like, who am I, Facebook? We don't do stuff like this. Anyway, again, thank you for your patience. We have moved up the book review for The Half Has Never Been Told, and I've been moving up some other content. The phase one of this new site only has the content from January 2017 forward. The rest will be in a library, and it looks like it's taking longer than expected to bring the library up. So what I'm trying to do is accelerate if you have any requests for things that you want, and I'm going to try and bring up a quickie feed of all the Salier Report audios and transcripts to ease the pain. Anyway, so keep your requests coming, and we'll do everything we can to make sure whatever you're specifically looking for, we're bringing it forward. Anyway, again, all feedback is deeply appreciated. Our theme tonight is trench warfare. Here in the United States, April 15th is tax time, and this year it's not just tax time for individuals, it's for corporations as well, so there's a new intensity. You can feel it. I'm calling it these days friction. I've been reading the U.S. Marine Corps Manual on Warfighting, and I discussed it in the equity overview tonight as well, but let me just read a section. Portrayed as a clash between two opposing wills, war appears a simple enterprise. In practice, the conduct of war becomes extremely difficult because of the countless factors that impinge on it. These factors collectively have been called friction, which Clausewitz described as the force that makes the apparently easy so difficult. Friction is the force that resists all action and saps energy. It makes the simple difficult and the difficult seemingly impossible. The very essence of war is a clash between opposed wills. Creates friction. In this dynamic environment of interacting forces, friction abounds. While striving ourselves to overcome the effects of friction, we must attempt at the same time to raise our enemy's friction to a level that weakens his ability to fight. In fact, if you look at what's going on in the environment, it's a perfect description. Friction is rising, and of course, everybody's trying to create as much friction as possible for their enemies. Let me just mention a few things that have been creating friction recently. First of all, the vampire squid wins big in your face. Big announcements this week that the big banks who engineered the financial coup d'etat have big earnings and are very much winners on the tax reform. And of course, their market share has never been bigger, and their use of the federal credit has never been bigger. Department of Defense making a big hoopla and a marvelous marketing job about they're doing an audit. Everybody, oh, don't worry about the $21 trillion. DOD is doing an audit of the 2017 year. Well, as a friend of mine used to say, whoopee shitty. If you're missing $2.1 million from your personal accounts and your CPA told you, don't worry, we're not going to look for that. We're not going to worry about that. We're just going to treat that like it's gone. But don't worry, we're going to do an audit of your next year's finances. What would you say? You wouldn't say, oh, how wonderful. Anyway, this is all in the face of the debt growing faster than revenues and income or any form of reasonable growth. The IMF announced global public and private debt has now swelled to 225% of global gross domestic product in 2016. So, and there's very much correlation between the amount of debt related to GNP and the increasing feeling of oppression in a police state. The more debt you have, the deeper you have to go, the more you have to dig into incomes and into assets to carry the debt. And that's particularly true with interest rates rising. So a combination of debt and rising interest rates means more friction. The state and local pain is rising to the surface as that happens. Dramatic impact on taxes, liabilities, pension payments, services, employment. We see real estate proposals for Harvard, Connecticut come in last week as basically investment firms try and take advantage of squeezing the assets out of balance sheets of a city that now thinks it's going to have to file for bankruptcy. Harvey, Illinois has been in and out of court. The first court ruled that they had to or that the state controller could garnish their taxes, which meant that they had to cut 40 police and fire department positions overnight. And the controller's garnishment was $1.5 million in tax revenues. So, and that was because the Harvey Police Pension Fund required it. So imagine if the pension funds all start skimming off the taxes and towns across the country start laying off firemen and police, you know who's going to move in next, especially if they pull our guns at the same time. One of the things that's creating friction is we're watching politics related to a layer of financial coup players being cleaned out now that the coup's been, you know, the coup is over. A lot of those people are not necessary anymore. They need to go. Dr. Farrell and I have talked about that in the last few news trends and stories of both the annual wrap-up and this wrap-up. We did a lot in the annual wrap-up on the purges. But the purges are continuing. Then, of course, we have big money and operations moving back into the United States. One of the things I put up in News Trends and Story this week was J.B. Hunt, the trucking company, had significant increase in revenues this quarter from last quarter, and that's a dead giveaway of the kind of movement back into the country that we're seeing. But we also have major predatory moves underway using new tech. Mergers and buybacks unleashed by tax reform and the capital moves, the tearing up of net neutrality, and now wars in Oregon and Washington have passed legislation for net neutrality in those states. California warring with the telecoms to get something through their state legislature. Don't be surprised if that doesn't spread. And that's all part of the war on independent media and small business, and it's designed to create maximum friction. Let me tell you, if you're playing the cybersecurity games that we're playing here at the Solari Report, the electronic harassment and shadow work is very, very expensive. And as I've told you for many years, we spend a great deal of time and money every year just on dealing with the extra friction and you get when you are in the independent media, particularly when you tell the truth about the money. It's one of the sensitive points. Another thing that's causing a lot of friction, I believe, is the increase in EMF and with it entrainment and mind control that is ramping up. I'm very concerned about that. It's one of my big concerns for this year and next, and it's one of the things I'm really looking forward to being with Jason in Sydney and Australia for a couple weeks, because his research, he's really been researching on what to do and how to deal with it. And it's part of what I would describe as growing fears about the environment. On the part of many people, we just see a deterioration in the environment, which is very significant. I know ever since the global spraying started, it's trying to keep the outside of your house clean, let alone the inside of your lungs clean, is very, very difficult. And then, of course, there's trying to manage the growing divide between the official reality and reality. And, of course, all the uncertainty about what is really going on. We know the official reality isn't really happening, but trying to figure out what is tough. I'm hoping after tax season we get a bit of a respite, but the reality is I expect friction to continue to rise both in the U.S. and the G7 nations. Anyway, there's cell networks and 5G rollout, which is going to be, you know, it's going to be throughout the developed world and the BRICS. Hopefully, Elena Friedland, we will publish her interviews in May and June, and she has a lot more to say that. If you haven't read her new book, Under an Ionized Sky, I strongly recommend it. And it's one of the reasons I'm trying to identify the best methods and locations around the globe to help minimize it in my life and see if I can help you minimize it in yours. I'm not convinced that there isn't a way, the perfect place we can go to get away from this. I think it's a global challenge, but I do find nomadic living helps me, particularly when I'm outside the 5i area or the 5i nations and NATO jurisdictions, just because of, I suspect, those satellite and cell systems. Anyway, if you have any ideas or suggestions on what we can do to outwit EMF and 5G, you know, keep those suggestions and ideas coming. We've gotten some great comments and subscriber comments. Anyway, the interview this evening has more about how to build resiliency in the face of rising fiction. It was one of the things I wanted to talk about, because if we do get a rape of Russia scenario here or just aggressive piratization, the friction will definitely rise. What can help? The full content of the annual wrap-up, the hard books are going to be ready next week, and the first quarter wrap-up. All the content from both wrap-ups is very helpful. Also very helpful is the interview that we're going to publish the week after next from Saker, The Emerging Multipolar World. We had a great conversation on why Syria and what's going on in the Syria situation. Money and markets. The U.S. dollar index now down 2.7% for the year. It's seesawing back and forth in a limited range between below the 92 line, basically 89 to 92. It's holding for now. I discuss it more in my review of Rambus Chartology in the equity overview tonight. It's a marvelous Rambus Chartology, a very deep, excellent look at the big picture. And even though, you know, Rambus is a technical analyst and I'm a fundamental analyst, we both come to the same place from very different methodologies. And it's remarkable how clearly our analysis aligns. So I recommend it to you. It's up on the web presentation. You can link from your subscriber links. The username and password is there for the special web presentation. But in the equity overview, I walk through the sort of Rambus's analysis and integrate it with my own. And it's a very good discussion of where we are in the markets. Fixed income, the long treasury ETF now down 5.35% for the year. Interest rates increasing a little bit. The intermediate bond now down 3% for the year. On the short end, it's interesting. A I just priced today a Bank of India FDIC-insured one-year CD at 2.15%. That's starting to look like a real yield. And the reality is if rates are rising, it's much more attractive to roll in a one-year CD, getting 2.15% and rolling up as interest rates rise than trying to lock up a longer rate. For example, the bond aggregate is, which is not yielding much more, is down 2.12% for the year. So, you know, why bother? Why not just roll up in the short end? It's what it looks like. And then junk now down almost 0.5% for the year. Equities rallied a little bit. So now last week we were flat. The S&P now up 1.2% for the year. Home builders still down almost 10%. Europe now up 2.11%. They've recovered. And Germany now up about 0.5%. The developed markets minus North America up 1.5%. The large cap China stocks up 2%. Small cap China up almost, it's really 3.75%. Emerging markets up 1.6%. So really China doing the best of anybody right now. Commodities up 4%. One of the messages in Rambus's report, and I agree, is that the consolidation is commodities is over and they're starting to perk up. And it looks like there's a real new attractive cycle coming in the commodities. I would also say that I think gold is going to perform well this year. The G20 finance ministers are meeting in Washington today and tomorrow. The IMF has been remarkably positive about global growth, particularly in face of their announcement about the current debt statistics. They're more pessimistic in the long run. One of the things that the G20 has announced ahead of the meeting is cryptocurrency regulation is back on the table. How connected it was with the finance ministers coming to town, I'm not sure, but there was a brief U.S. flirtation in the White House with re-entering the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which seems to have fizzled out very quickly. Of course, the big news is Syria. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it because I had such a great conversation with Saker, and I hope you really listen to it. But the reality is we've had a fake chemical attack. First, we had a spy poisoning blamed on the Russians with no hard evidence. The Brits basically falling back on that. It's highly likely. Then we had a fake chemical attack. And now we apparently have had a fake retaliatory missile strike. A lot of this really has to do with protecting the dollar and the position of the unipolar empire. So Syria is about Iran, and Iran is about Russia and China, and that will lead you right back into the city of London and Wall Street and the bowels of Washington. This is really about the unipolar model and who controls all sorts of different kinds of flows, the big one being oil and the reserve currency. So, but there was a remarkable interview that the BBC did with Lavrov that I posted. We posted up in News Trends and Stories, and I've requested that it be added to top news videos for the second quarter wrap up. It's exclusive and unedited, and it is a remarkable demonstration of a very capable diplomat with great courage and intelligence and discipline standing up to the lies of the Ziocons and their outrageous hubris. And it is so remarkably done. It's very inspiring. And you listen to Lavrov, and I know what it's like because I've had to stand in a very brutal assault for 11 years by the Ziocons, but clearly not on the world stage. And what Lavrov and Putin are doing takes tremendous courage, tremendous intelligence, and tremendous discipline. And it's one of the reasons that instead of getting a real mess in Syria, you know, the worst thing that happened was a fake retaliatory missile strike. And I think it's very much to the Russians' credit. And when you watch Lavrov, what you realize is, you know, we're dealing with adults here. Needless to say, Trump has been in a squeeze, whether his family having their helicopter engine go out or this latest seizing of records of Trump's personal attorney. It really does remind you of the Bill Clinton impeachment when they busted through all the internal financial controls, squeezing the president, got Glass-Steagall torn up, and the financial coup was off to the races. So one way or another, Trump is getting squeezed. Mueller's investigation is a complete flop. He's found nothing other than the Democrats went to very silly and careless lengths to basically frame Trump for Russian collusion. And if anything, the Democrats and a variety of people at the Department of Justice and the FBI have broken a lot of laws in the process. The seizure of Trump's personal attorney's records, Cohen, is very serious. Breaking attorney-client privilege, as far as I'm concerned, is a terrible mistake. Why it was allowed, I don't know. But the response has been swift. We see a dozen Republican members of Congress on Wednesday send a criminal referral to the Justice Department and the FBI seeking an investigation of Comey, McCabe, Attorney General Lynch, and Hillary Clinton in connection with 2016 campaign controversies. I'm surprised it took so long to get that done. Sessions has announced, he announced last month, he's had assigned a federal prosecutor apparently out in Utah to be doing a serious investigation. If you look at both what has come out on Uranium One or a variety of other things, it wouldn't surprise me if Sessions is carefully building up to something very significant. It could just be that I'm hoping he is, but we'll see where that goes. The Inspector General of the Department of Justice, who'd been asked to look at the McCabe situation today, made a referral for criminal prosecution. McCabe's attorney tried to blow it off, Michael Bromwich. I don't think you can blow that off. I think that's very serious. But the real serious time will come when the Utah prosecutor Huber comes forth with whatever he comes forth. And given what's sitting around and sealed in indictments, it makes you wonder what's happening. A few little positive notes behind that question mark. The Wall Street Journal today, or yesterday, this week, had an article on the implosion of the Podesta Group. And it's quite interesting because it opens lots of different doors to a serious investigation of the Podestas and the pay-for-play network. And it was a very, I would call it a very reasonable hit job. I mean, obviously, I think the investigative journalism was probably pretty impeccable. But they went into a lot of personal dirt that you don't normally see the Wall Street Journal go into. And I suspect that is the door opening to something much bigger occurring vis-a-vis the Clinton team and the people involved in sort of shenanigans at the Department of Justice during the 2016 campaign. The reality, though, is these things are coming to a head, particularly because Mueller has struck out completely. I don't know what anybody thinks they can come up with by going after Trump's personal attorney. What they're going to do is they're going to find all sorts of dirt related to Trump before he became president, and it's not going to touch his base. It's not going to touch it's certainly not going to create anything impeachable. It's going to create a headache for him. And putting pressure like that on a sitting president is a pretty ugly thing to do. The positive today on all of that is Rudy Giuliani announced he's joining Trump's legal team for the good of the country. And I think that's a very good development, because if you look at the lawlessness and the silliness of what's going on, it's very, very bad. You know, if you want to lose reserve currency status, if you want to tremendously hurt your ability to project power in this world, America's committing suicide. We're literally losing our mind. Giuliani is someone who has a very deep knowledge of the real corruption discovered on the Anthony Weiner laptop, has very good relationships with the New York FBI office. And he's a major adult and knows how to come in and settle this and get this, number one, calmed down, but taken care of and headed in whatever direction the faction that has won the White House wants. The reality is, if you look at who has won the White House through using Trump as their, basically, the horse that they ride, there's no way they're giving up the White House, and there's no way they have to. So, you know, all the Cohen situation can do is make a whole lot of mess and make it impossible or very, very difficult for Trump to function, and very easy to squeeze him. If you look at the, you know, the fake missile strike on Syria, it looks like Trump was getting squeezed. And so the military put on a show that allowed the show to go on, but allowed no harm to be done and made sure that no escalation happened in the situation. We see Pompeo working his way through approvals, running into some trouble in the Senate. So let's see if he overcomes it. And then, of course, his deputy coming up to run CIA, running into opposition. So they're working through the process, as are a significant backlog of appointments. It's extremely difficult for the administration to get anything done with this kind of backlog. It's extremely painful, and it's the price of the friction of the war going on in Washington. And then Trump preparing to meet with Kim, that is coming up. So this level of stress is very dangerous. Let's have Giuliani going in there brings it down. I wanted to also point out on the website, I just posted, or will post by tomorrow, a new interview of Dave Gianda with filmmaker John Paul Rice about, he's got a new film coming out, premiering in LA, on pedophilia and human trafficking. Very much worth watching. You can pick it up on Dave Janda's Twitter feed, and I tweeted it out on my Twitter feed, so it's there as well. As I mentioned earlier, AT&T and the cable telecom lobby are terrified of a California net neutrality bill. Go California, please pass that, because then we'll have Oregon, Washington, and California. And I assure you, if you look at what AT&T and the telecoms are set to do by tearing up net neutrality, it is not pretty. It is not pretty. They are basically going to shut down. You know, they're going to put a kill switch on everybody and everything, and use this to ram every dime of small business income and labor wages into the big corporations. So, you know, this is they're going to turn the internet into a weapon of war against your assets and income, is my opinion on this. So I wrote a second piece on the AT&T situation several weeks ago. I wrote a recommendation to our subscribers on why they needed to drop AT&T. If you go to our store, there's now something that requests that you not sign up with an AT&T email. We don't have the ability to get communications to you if you do, is what we believe. Every indication is they continue to do their block. I wrote a second article called Net Neutrality, Why Marsha Blackburn Will Not Win the Tennessee Race. Blackburn is my congressman. She's the chair of the subcommittee in the House Energy Committee that let net neutrality get torn up and approved ISPs trading away your browsing history. Bob Corker came out and said he will not campaign for her against Bredesen, who's the Democratic candidate. Very interesting. Blackburn polling 10 points behind Bredesen in a state that Trump won by 26 points, which will show you how angry people are about net neutrality. And it wouldn't surprise me. It's clear by Corker's indication that Bredesen has got the establishment support. So I think Blackburn may pay the price for coming out again, or letting net neutrality get torn up. Our hero this week is Sir Thomas More. More was an English lawyer and counselor to Henry VIII, very famous, and he is portrayed in a very famous movie and play called A Man for All Seasons. And I put up a little video from A Man for All Seasons with a wonderful scene about Sir Thomas More talking about the law. And you, if you click on Hero, you can see it. He's talking with William Roper. And so Roper is furious because he won't arrest someone. and have him thrown in jail. And Roper says, so now you give the devil the benefit of the law. And Moore says, yes, what would you do? Cut a great road through the law to get after the devil? And Roper says, yes, I'd cut down every law in England to do that. And then Moore says, oh, and when the last law was down and the devil turned round on you, where would you hide, Roper? The laws all being flat. The country is planted thick with laws from coast to coast, man's laws, not God's. And if you cut them down and you're just the man to do it, do you really think you could stand upright in the winds that would blow then? Yes, I'd give the devil benefit of the law for my own safety's sake. It's a very, very beautiful passage and very well played. So you take a look at the video. But I put it up because I keep sending the same message. Enforce the Constitution or kiss your money goodbye. I have seen in the last 6 weeks so much promotion of lawlessness by the independent media. Round them up and put them in Gitmo. Let's tear up the debt. Let's dissolve the government. All of that is a consciousness that will be used to abrogate obligations to the general population. All of that will be used, if we let it take hold, to basically, you know, and what they're saying is, you know, let's tear up the law to get at the devil. But the reality is when you finish tearing up the law to get at the devil, guess what's going to happen? The devil will turn around and you'll have nothing to protect you or to stand those winds. So if we run around and talk, oh, it's really great to round everybody up and put them in Gitmo, or it's really great to tear up the debt, whose debt do you think will be torn up? The defaults will be to our pension funds, our IRAs, our 401ks, our Social Security, our Medicare, our Medicaid, our food stamps. It's not going to be to the powerful. You know, the powerful will be able to protect those interests, but the general population is the one that lawlessness will be used to abrogate debts to. So be very careful before you suggest anything other than enforce the Constitution. Enforcing the Constitution is what gets us the $21 trillion back if we want it. Enforcing the Constitution is what allows us to have a Constitution that protects us. It protects the Second Amendment. It protects all the different, it protects freedom of speech. It stops crazy things like tearing up net neutrality. So we want to be for the law, because our being for the law is what protects everybody, including ourselves. In Let's Go to the Movies, I had to point out one of my favorites from our presentation on space in the movies. If you go to the first quarter wrap-up web presentation, one of the sections under the space-based economy is space in the movies. And I find you can learn a lot about space by watching movies. One of my absolute all-time favorites is Battlestar Galactica. I've reviewed it in Let's Go to the Movies before. It's the TV series, not the original movie, and it's something I never wanted to watch. We had an intern working at Solari, and he encouraged me to watch it. I would never have done it without his prodding. Well, once I got started, I couldn't stop. It's about many things, but again, it's about the power of law and how to be successful in the face of an effort to actively destroy you, your culture, and your people. And it's a great description regarding the sort of interaction and issues in governance between the political side and process and the military. It's, if anything, it's Shakespearean, and wonderful issues about men and women. So how women look at things, how men look at things, and why a balance provides really great governance. It's also a wonderful exploration of the risks of depending on centralized digital systems and the risks of artificial intelligence and robotics. If you want to think through those issues, it's a very imaginative way of exploring them in a very powerful setting that's extremely well done as an art form and an entertainment form. So you have great art, great entertainment, and really a Shakespearean analysis and digestion of issues of our day, which are critically important. So anyway, so I love great theater, but I think Battlestar Galactica is one of the great TV series productions of all time. I think 5+ seasons, so plenty to watch if you get hooked. You'll be going on it for quite a while. Our interview this week is the Equity Overview, and it gave me a chance to sit down, chew through the charts with Rambus, and of course we have our own financial charts on the web presentation. I'm always struck by the subscribers who say, "Oh, well, I'm not interested in the securities market, so I don't look at the financial charts." The financial charts are not just about the securities markets; they're about how the money's working around us in different industries and different sectors and different places and different kinds of activities. And there's a great deal in those charts that tells you what's happening, that impacts politics, that impacts all sorts of behavior, that impacts the world around you and you. So I find mapping out how the money works around me to be wildly useful to teach me and help me understand many different things, not just securities. And one of my goals on the Solera Report is to invest more time in analytics and helping you do that. Okay, ask Catherine. My wife went to the doctor today. We really like the doctor and feel like she does a good job. She suggested that my wife do some genetic testing. That makes me a little nervous as to who might have access to the information. Is there a secure company that will do genetic testing? In my opinion, this is a very bad idea. Once you do that testing, consider the information public, certainly sucked up into the database to be used for its benefit. So to me, there's no such thing as a secure company that does genetic testing, and there's no such thing as digital systems that transfer and store and communicate that data that are secure. So I think it's a much better idea to focus the time and resources on nurturing good health. You know what you need to do to be healthy. And I don't think that's a, I mean, if I wasn't worried about the information getting into the wrong hands, to me, more testing and more intelligence is good. The other thing is, I would say if you really want to do a deep test, I would get a really great energetic healer and find out what you need to clean out energetically to stay really healthy at a deep level. So, but if you did want to do genetic testing, I think, you know, to try and be safe, I'd go to Switzerland and see if I could find a very wealthy private clinic that would agree to do it under a pseudonym and not use your real name. I've just been browsing your website and reading some of Dr. Farrell's latest books in his blog commentary. I've been looking at the policies and GDP of countries other than our own. I don't quite know how to take things and what to accept and throw out. I'm not going to throw out names of historical programs, but I'm sure you get the feel of what I'm referring to. I doubt even if the creator's wildest dreams that things would progress so far and be used against not only our own citizens, but peoples of the world. I keep having bad feelings and a few nightmares here and there if people in real power with real authority have their way. I need to ask you this question. Above all, do you believe the creators of humanity, and I'm not referring to God here, will allow us to go into such a dark direction, or do you feel there will be some form of interruption? Here's the thing. It's not that interruption isn't possible, but humankind is responsible. That means intervention, if it comes, will only come to those who lead and take responsibility and point to a direction as to where we go. If you don't want to go in a dark direction, you have to point to where we're going to go. Intervention can't help you unless we're pointing to where we want to go. So if we want a human future, we have to make that happen. We have to point to where it go, and then intervention, if it's going to come, can show up. But it's not, it's going to come to those who lead. It's not going to come to those who wait, but this is our responsibility. It's our planet. It's our job to invent our future. And that is the only way this turns out in the kind of human future we want. Dear Catherine, where can I access the 2009 and 2010 annual wrap-ups on the new website? Thank you. I've asked our team to come up with a plan to accelerate posting duplicates, both what anybody requests. So I've requested that we get the 2009 and 2010 up next week for you. So we'll pull it out of the library, which is not up yet. The other thing is I'd like to see if I can't get a table of all the wrap-ups, at least the MP3s and the transcripts up from the beginning until now, from 2009 forward. So forgive us for not having phase two ready to go yet. It's going to take a while, but any requests you have, let me know. And I'm going to certainly try and accelerate the wrap-ups getting up into the phase one website. I then got a long response to some of my comments about what's going on from South Africa from an amazing subscriber, very intelligent, very capable, knows a lot more about the situation on the ground than I do. I'm going to be spending some of the time this summer with some people from South Africa, and I'm hoping to learn a lot more. With his comments, he sent some links that to help understand more about the situation. So it looks like there's some really interesting links in that question, and I would encourage you to read it. It'll be in the notes. Absolutely fascinating report. Then a wonderful question from coming in on the website about, oh my God, all these different things going on. What do we pay attention to? QAnon, this and that. You know, I would avoid spending much time on the inside baseball of what's going on in Washington. You could literally, if you're in my shoes, you could spend 8 hours a day just reading the updates of the Department of Justice, FBI, White House, back and forth, whether on Mueller, on the Southern District of New York investigation related to Cohen, or the Utah investigation. I mean, it's on and on and on. And of course, a lot of different groups are garnering attention and raising money, paying attention to that, or different things like the Second Amendment. I think what's important is you know what's important to you and you contribute to those efforts. So I continually keep contributing to people who are trying to do something to restore net neutrality or trying to protect the Second Amendment. So pick a couple of issues that you think are critical. You know, we always post our donations up in News Trends and Stories. So if I sign a petition or make a donation, you can see what I'm doing. But pick a couple of things you care about and support them. But I would stay away from the day-to-day baseball and really focus on the deep trends. I wouldn't focus on the covert gossip. I pretty regularly check quickly, no more than a minute, you know, maybe 2 minutes a week, and look 3 minutes a week, and look at what QAnon is posting, just because I want to see what the gossip is. But to me, that's hope porn and fear porn. I don't think it's useful. I would really focus on the deep trends and understanding the deep trends, because that's what's going to make a big difference for your ability to navigate what is happening right now and what's coming. We've done a lot in the annual wrap-up that came out in January and in this first quarter wrap-up to talk about what those trends are and what you can do about them. And I would really, really focus on that, because the more you can do to build resiliency in your life, the better off you're going to be. So I would be focused on building resiliency, and sitting around for 8 hours watching inside baseball in Washington is not going to build that resiliency. Okay, that's it for this evening. So next week, final chapter for the first quarter 2018 wrap-up. Our theme, the space-based economy. We'll be talking about all the unanswered questions that makes it very interesting to come up with a framework to think about what's going on in space around us and what the relative economics are of the different activity, what's important, what's not, who will look at, who are the players. We have great charts and tables, thanks to Jason Worth, of all of the space companies traded first on the U.S. markets, then a table on those traded on the European markets, and then those traded on the Asian markets, as well as private companies and government organizations. You can see it up on the web presentation. It's still evolving and be published in final form next Thursday. But for any of you interested in the whole business side of the sector, it's a wealth of great information, and you can see a lot about the the pretty substantial players who were involved. So April 26th, first quarter 2018 wrap up the space-based economy. Then on May 3rd, as I said, the emerging multipolar world with Saker. We're going to be talking about why Syria and walk you through the steps of Syria's really about Iran and Iran's really about China and Russia. And then May 10th, Dr. Edwin Vieira, one of my favorites, great constitutional scholar, returns for Enforce the Constitution, the militias. We're going to talk about the concept of the militias in the Constitution. What were the militias? Why are they important? What can they teach us about what we need to do now? And again, it's all about having the law and enforcing the Constitution. So until next week, when I will talk with you about the space-based economy from Sydney, Australia, down under, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.